previously.tvpodcastnetwork.
Tonight, history will be made and hopefully love will be found as we try to find one eligible gentleman a wife.
This is the Extra Hot Grape Podcast, episode 208 for the week of June 18th, 2018. I am Howie Mandel's son, David T. Cole, and I'm here with Raw Veal, Sarah D. Bunting.
Come on, guys.
Ghostly Apparition, Tara Ariano.
Ooh.
And Evicted Biscuit, Jeff Drake.
I'm an animal who does things.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Extra Hot Great. Joining us this week is Mr. Jeff Drake. Hello, Jeff.
Hello. Hey, Jeff.
Yay!
So this week I proposed a different sort of show where we're going to take a whole bunch of sort of B and C level reality and reality adjacent TV shows and just do like a good hard 5 minutes on each of them. These are shows you may slash probably have not heard of, with the exception of our last show, The Proposal. These are shows on channels such as Nat Geo Wild, Travel Channel, et al. That's the kind of show we're talking about today. And our first one is none other than Caribbean Pirate Treasure. And guys, this was my pick to be on the list. And just by title alone, because the way it came up in the DVR was Caribbean Pirate Treasure, : Dead Man's Island, : something else. There was actually two colons in the title.
Yeah.
And I thought that was the title of the show. And I got really excited about a show that somehow managed to have two colons in it. But alas, it was just the name of the episode after Caribbean Pirate Treasure. You all watched it. First impressions, Jeff?
Oh, well, my first impression is that the Cousteaus, it's Jacques Cousteau's grandson.
Yes,
Philippe.
I believe that's right.
And his wife, Ashlyn. And they seem like horrible people. and then there's just the fact, I watched this whole thing, I guess, because I was hoping for treasure.
Yeah.
And
expecting the Caribbean.
Expecting the Caribbean, instead staying only about 1,500 miles away from the Caribbean. So, like, pretty close, I guess, loosely defined as Caribbean.
It's far enough away that they either have to pony up to go through the Panama Canal or, you know, go around the Horn of South America.
I mean, this is what this show reminded me of is years ago, there was a show called Twister Sisters. And it was about sisters who were tornado chasers. And a friend of mine out here was actually an editor on the show. And I said, what's it like? He was like, well, we finished the season. They didn't see any tornadoes.
Yeah. I said to Dave, this is like, there's a whole class of shows where it's like, thing might happen and then it never does.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like the Treasure of Oak Island or
Curse of Oak Island. Yes.
Oh God. People keep asking it. They're like, it's true crime. I'm like, it's not anything. There's no truth. There's no crime. This is the same. Like I lasted 7 minutes and when the strings of heavy pirate security got super concerned that someone was going to come up to Ashlyn with a cuirass or a cutlass or whatever weapon starts with C and ends with ass that a pirate would use, I was like, that's not going to fucking happen. Nothing's going to happen. This is Raise the Titanic, but more boring.
Yeah.
It's total like county ER waiting room TV. I couldn't, and I didn't after 7 minutes.
Yeah. If in Finding Bigfoot, at least there's the promise you might see a Bigfoot, even though you know you never will. And this is like, so we might see some coins. Who gives a fuck? Like,
I mean,
for me.
Look, if you're listening to this podcast and you still are thinking, maybe I want to see this show, then I'll give you a game to play. And that's a drinking game where you take a drink anytime anyone says olive jar. and you're good for a while, but then all of a sudden you're going to have to drink like a fifth of booze because they say it so many times in like 2 minutes that you'll be dead before the end of the show.
So Caribbean Pirate Treasure, let's just run it down, because the way that this episode is presented, this show should actually be called Ecuadorian Safety Olive Jar. Because they're nowhere near the Caribbean, nor is it tied to anything in the Caribbean. They are off the coast of Ecuador. They encounter no pirates. They actually have to gin up a pirate scare that turned out to be just the Coast Guard coming back. The closest thing they get to treasure is the side of a broken olive jar container from a wreck at some point in the past. And they, at the end of it, decide to go on to the Dead Man's Island and do a little, basically, you know, Uncle Dave on the beach with his metal detector. That's how this episode ends. They're just on this desolate island. And then they're like, beep, beep, beep. Oh, we found something big. And then the episode ends. Like, maybe go back. No. Nah.
Nope.
Let's just
end the episode. Looked hard enough. We spent 20 minutes walking around the beach. Yep. My favorite part, though, just real quick, because I know we need to move on, but is when they're motoring up towards it, and Ashlyn says, "From a distance, Santa Clara Island looks like a dead man lying in the water."
Thank you for bringing that up.
And it's like, no, it looks like an island. Mm-hmm. Like, it looks nothing like a human. It's not like, oh, that island in Moana totally looks like a lady lying on her side, because it is. You know, it's not even close. Not even close.
We should say, first of all, this is on the Travel Channel. If you want to try and find it, it's Wednesday nights at 9 Eastern. This is the only show that we'll be talking about today that is in its second season. All the others were series premieres. And so I presume that the first season actually did involve actual Caribbean pirate treasure. And then they were like, oh shit, we got picked up. We got to find something. Let's find this dude we kind of know and who wrote a self-published, clearly, book.
Oh my God. About so this clearly. Island.
But yeah, this is remarkably the only one that managed to make it past a first season thus far, and by far the most boring one.
I think having watched this, I think we should collect shows of this type, shows that are, we're going to find a thing in a place and just call them geographical impossibility shows. And then that's the genre. Here's a place and here's the thing we're definitely not going to find.
Oh, yeah.
All right. Moving on to our second show. It's a bit of an outlier content wise, and it is called Broken Trust. This is sort of in the Blotter Presents area. So let's let Sarah take this one.
Okay. I don't know why it's called that, but I do feel like on the Blotter Presents podcast, we have noted recently that a lot of shows, like, they just find this name from the, like, you know, crimey show name generator. And then they reverse engineer whatever crime is involved to fit the brief.
Right.
This broke my trust in terms of assuming that at least I've watched enough true crime to get through the whole thing. I could not. My tolerance for shitty reenactments is both higher and lower, I would say, than the average viewer. I see a lot of them. I am compassionate towards their participants. But this, I mean, it started out hilarious. Like the reenactment of the beloved bar owner,
Biscuit.
Hank, biting it.
Oh, no, not Biscuit.
The party by the name of Biscuit, I believe, was a suspect / neighbor.
I'm sorry. I got very excited.
There's like a whole scene that goes on for minutes, plural, of the neighbors talking about Hank, beloved bar owner, and being like, hey, Hank, beloved bar owner, appears to have perished. Like, oh my God, get on with it. We don't need the exposition. It was classic, terrible reenactment acting. But the reenactments in general in this one were, even for this genre, so slow, so bad. And then my favorite part, I think, by second to a party by the name of Biscuit, was this reenactment of the landlady arriving at someone's door and announcing, quote, "It's that time of the month again." Not what that means, yeah. Sis. So I wrote down phrasing and then I quit the show 90 minutes in. Tara Ariano, did you complete your mission with Brian?
Oh, yeah. Trust? Dave and I watched all of the shows.
Because we care.
My one question for you was what Just already you. Answered, which was, what is the peg for this show? I mean, I get that your investigation discovery, for some reason, someone gave you an entire channel to make all shows like this. So you have to like start somewhere, I guess. But this is just like a regular, you know, it's a story of a lady who got murdered.
Differs not at all. That it's like the trust that was broken was everyone's trust generally that they're probably not going to be killed.
I was going to say, I'm going to trust that you're not going to murder me. Wrong. Yeah. The show.
If you had hung around, you would have discovered that at the end, they really retrofit it to the fact that the brother and sister did it and that the brother was kind of roped into doing it. And so his trust of his sister was broken.
That's
because
okay.
She convinced him to get in on this murder of the landlord that was, you know, trying to get her money from her. He was sentenced at the age of 19, which is how, I mean, that's how old he was when he was, you know, conspired to this murder without, as far as we know, actually doing anything. He was sentenced to 65 to 100 years, which I was like, yeah. What the fuck? And Dave was like, what? It's murder. I was like, 65 to 100 years? Like, Monique gets sentenced to life. When you're talking about 65 to 100 years, just call it life, first of all. And second of all, really? Like, yeah. That seems extremely excessive.
And third of all, this just occurred to me. I really thought briefly that the show was going in some direction during which the landlady was going to kill Biscuit for bringing bed bugs into her building.
Ooh.
Yeah.
I would watch that show. Like real estate murders, it's not like you'll ever run out of.
I mean,
material.
It's the weird. It's the most frustrating show because for most of it, I was like, "What am I watching?" I know, like, because they leave out so much information to try to make it enticing, but it's like they leave out too much, and so it's like they find a dead body at the beginning, but you don't know who it is, and now here's all of these people that are involved. So you don't know whether you're looking at possible suspects or possible victims for most of the show.
Exactly.
You're like, is Biscuit going to be killed? Is the mom going to be killed? Is the guy with the detailing shop going to be killed? And they paint everybody in these broad strokes of suspicion. And then basically then none of it adds up to anything. Like nobody is really a suspect. Except for like, and then they catch the lady who did it, the single mother,
Monique.
who's a single mother just trying to do her best, as described when we first meet.
Okay, but yeah. She was going to keep the body in her closet indefinitely. That's kind of bummer.
Yeah, right. No, but then thank you for bringing that up because
for fiction. Come on.
Then there's
it's
the guy
ruin the floors.
The cop then says. And that rattled her into making a mistake. It's like, wait, didn't she make a mistake when she murdered the lady?
Yes. Seems like a pretty big oops.
I feel like she's made a few mistakes so far. And so
Time Master Dave says we spent too much time on this. Last thought. I'm really impressed. They got Tracy Jordan's Not Some from 30 Rock to play the victim's nephew. That was great. Boom. Yeah. Boom. Oh, no. It's Godzilla. He was on the show. That was great. All right. Moving on. Gordon Ramsay's 24 Hours to Hell and Back. This is yet another iteration of Gordon Ramsay fixes your shit, but it's faster and more intense.
Yeah.
I kind of love this show and I might keep watching it. Sorry.
I'm with you. I'm 100%.
This was Sarah's addition to the doc because Dave was wrong when in his setup. The Proposal is one of the shows that's on a real network. This is the other. Of course, it's on Fox, like all of the Gordon Ramsay shows. And this is basically, as Dave said, it's exactly Kitchen Nightmares, but faster. And I was immediately hooked when we get the backstory of this restaurant that I assume is on Long Island, Sarah.
No, it is in, it's like a little north of where my brother Dave lives in Congers. It's like a Westchester, Northwestchester. Okay.
So it's a brother and sister running this place. It used to be the sister's husband was involved too, and then he died, I think.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. Which the brother, whose name is Vinny, seems to blame her for that he was, he, at one point, is like, he just left the business without telling me. Like, he fucking died. Like, unless it's suicide, in which case,
right.
I honestly don't blame him, Vinny, having spent 1 hour with you fucking talking.
The way he said that made you think that maybe his parents were going to bring in, like, a human that just looks just like his brother that he'll never know, like the dead dog from the childhood. Like.
Yeah, so the problem is twofold. One, Vinny is a horrible, toxic person, and no one can work with him, and no one would want to. He's like one of the worst people I've ever seen on a reality show, and I've fucking seen some, and I watch all of the Teen Moms.
But he's especially bad because he vacillates so quickly between rage and self-pity.
Yes.
And it's like the two worst qualities in a person together almost at once.
He's a fidget spinner, and the three things are self-pity, rage, and then the quietness. Like, those are the things that's constantly spinning around.
What if Tony Soprano but cook?
Not even. He's like just the guy who walks around the restaurant glad-handing everyone. So the way that they've been able to keep this restaurant running for like 7 years, I think they said, is that Vinny and his sister Dory's dad has been pouring money out of his retirement account into the business to the tune of, and there was like a pause before they said it, and there was like $1.2 million. I was like, what?
Yes.
This is 12 times as much money minimum as anyone should have poured into this sinking ship. Like, it's brutal.
Yeah, you know where you can't ever get half-decent Italian food? The tri-state area. Come on, guys. Like, this isn't Kansas. You're not gonna own that waterfront. Just quit. Burn it down. No. It's the American way.
I take umbrage with that remark, by the way. There's a very fine Italian restaurant in Kansas City that was formerly mob-owned.
Okay.
So anyway, moving on.
Kansas City, Missouri, I assume.
Same diff. Anyway.
Don't add me.
The main thing I wrote down on this show was, holy shit, fixing this restaurant is not going to fix this family, because they just keep framing it as like, oh, if only the restaurant would get, would become successful, then everything would be okay. It's like, no, it's not. The dad's an enabler. The dad who owned the place, who's sunk $1.2 million into it, is an enabler. Vinny is incredibly toxic, and so is Dory for just being codependent and a punching bag. And that poor 17-year-old daughter, like, good Lord. But that all said, like, I fucking loved this show.
Yeah.
Well, let's talk about Sweet Lou in the kitchen, who's like, the walk-in's supposed to close. You're supposed to cook veal. What am I, an asshole? Like, he's sending out baked clams with only the baked.
Yeah. You
know, like, actual clam, which is probably safer for everyone.
Oh, yeah.
And, that was one of my favorite parts, is that they really like steered into the graphics, like the 1980s bomb defusal alert graphics, like missing clam. I was like, oh my God. Also, Gordon Ramsay is wearing like a merkin and thick glasses, like Junior Soprano glasses.
Yeah.
Because disguise reasons. I mean, like, there's something about, like, we eat out / order in enough that, like, seeing a huge vat of salad dressing with sentient mold around the rim is not something I necessarily should be doing for my own peace of mind. But I enjoy Gordon Ramsay. He knows his brand and does it well. And it's a, like, fascinating show full of assholes that I could feel superior to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, move over, Mike Myers. Here comes Gordon Ramsay. Fat bastard. Yeah. Yeah, it was very entertaining. You get to judge people who, and that really is like what TV's all about. Right, Tara?
Yes.
Yes. All right, moving on. Howie Mandel's animals doing things.
I want to say, first of all, this is on Nat Geo Wild, and originally when I found it on Futon Critics' upcoming shows listing, it was in there as Animals Doing Things with Howie Mandel, which better / worse title, and I'm sorry it's not still called that.
Phrasing.
Yeah.
So this is basically a show that scrapes YouTube for animal videos, and then Howie Mandel does some work on it, and then they just jog the video back and forth a lot to fill time.
Yeah.
And that's the show. Once again, proving that commentary on top of animal videos is inherently less funny than just watching the animal videos. So thank you for that, Howie Mandel, and Howie Mandel's son, who I assume is a producer or something, because he has the most shoehorned appearance in this episode about halfway through. It was extremely embarrassing.
It was, and they don't even have the wherewithal to scrape YouTube. By the way, this is based on an Instagram account called Animals Doing Things. So they just went to the Instagram account, took all the videos, and put them on, made a show that for some reason is an hour long, which is extremely excessive.
It's an hour?
Yeah.
I got 4 minutes into it. When they did Brave Herd, I was out.
I wanted to bail at Howie Mandel's donkey imitation, but I was I was confused about the 5 minute thing that we were doing, and I thought that we didn't have to watch the whole thing, but we had to watch at least 5 minutes, which I thought was a good rule. But this show, oh my God, like, it was the bulldog with the sunglasses rapping that I finally was like, America is over, goodbye, and stopped watching it. But like, my first and only note besides that was that, you know, I have an Instagram account. I don't need the show. So,
America is not over until we talk about the last show.
Oh,
But anyway, I guess Howie Mandel gets to do any TV show he wants to, and people just put it on. Like, he's constantly got some show that costs like $3 to make on somewhere. And I love that at the beginning, he's like, I love animals and animals doing things. So I said, this should be a TV show. And the answer to that is, you're wrong. It shouldn't be. but it shouldn't be. And that island doesn't look like a dead man. I'm sorry.
Kids would like this show. I mean, I get it. Like, fine. But what makes this such a grift is not just the sun aspect, but like, Howie Mandel literally is phoning it in, except for one scene of him like handling his son's various animals. Phrasing, sorry, but he is like, he doesn't even have the wherewithal to like, sorry to use that word twice in one segment, he doesn't even like do bumpers in between them. Like, he just literally is only a voice. And also, when he starts it out saying like, I love animals, like, you're the most famous germaphobe in the world. I doubt that you love animals at all.
Yeah.
America is failing us, as Jeff said the last show. Jeff, take it away. We're talking about The Proposal.
Guys, where to even begin? This is the show that we deserve as a country right now. This is we've earned this and this exactly. It is the perfect combination of a 60-minute version of a beauty pageant meets The Bachelor
or Studs.
Or Hot or Not. Was that what it was called? With Lorenzo Lamas?
Yes, Am I Hot or Not?
Where they used the laser pointer? Excuse me. Wow. That they did, they actually did, like, they're going to wear beach wear in the next segment. I was like, what?
That's where I quit. 9 minutes in that I was like,
oh my gosh.
I mean, the archery and science. Like, when he's introducing them.
And, she's a baton twirler. Oh, yeah. And a neuroscientist.
Sure. Oof. Yeah. And there was someone who was very proud of her calves. And I was like, relatable. And then she was eliminated.
Yeah.
Like, if you're going to be this, like, disgusting a specimen, don't be boring also.
Yeah.
You know, like, it dragged on. It was so listy and dull. And it's like, this is a Frankenstein of other, like, kind of equally disgusting shows that at least had the courage of their conviction, their single conviction, which was to make money. So it's like, okay, you know, I don't need this. I don't need to get to the end.
Yeah. I mean, as someone who has watched and extensively covered Married at First Sight, the show where a man and woman meet at the altar and then get married and then you watch them, like, I honestly can't decide whether that is a more abhorrent idea for a show than this pageant format, because we haven't even talked about the fact that the guy can see all of the women and is like winnowing them down in each segment, but they can't see him, and we also can't see him because in his intro package except when they're showing him from the front.
I forgot about this.
Replaced him with this like ghostly apparition. It's like a bulkier version of the blank robots from Westworld. It's just like this shape of a person,
or like the ice creature in that Peter Gabriel video.
No, it's creepy. Radioactive Pillsbury Doughboy.
Sold.
They look like the blank spaces in the season 2 and 3 opening credits of The Leftovers.
Yes,
is what he looks like.
He's
sparkly. And so they all just have to take it on faith, like, well, ABC picked him. He must be great. Like, they know nothing about him at all. And all we know about him is that he is a shape. And then they say he's a cop in Bakersfield. Like, good luck with your racist cop lady who witnessed, like, not to profile anyone, but come on.
No, you're right. You're right. You're 100%
right. Well, we also know that he is an amputee.
Right.
Like,
we know, but they don't. And he springs it on one as a question and then comes clean with the rest of them. That was my favorite. She stepped up and he's like,
you know what he should have done is when that topic came up is like, I have something to tell you. And then he just throws his leg over that booth he's in and it lands in front of all the clunk.
Let me give you a leg up in the decision-making process. Well,
I'm sorry. Did my question stump you?
Oh,
I'm going to have to ankle some of you.
Never be the foot of a major
I thought the most telling piece of set dressing was that all the signs that they made the audience wave around, you know, one for Monica, one for whoever isn't Monica, Janice, whatever, all suspiciously exactly in the same handwriting. With the same heart accoutrement around it.
And the two women that ended up at the end, like there were two signs that were shown and they were for the two women that ended up at the end.
Yeah.
So good work being future forecasters.
Now,
we
have The Bachelor, which is like 7 weeks or whatever. And now we have The Proposal, which is like 45 minutes. I'm thinking about what's the next step. Like, how do we make this even faster so we can fit in 4 or 5 proposals within 1 hour and really get this going. There's a scene in Futurama where they're trying to figure out who's Kif's mate and they put him in a centrifugal force machine and just kind of spits him out. So something like that, where it's like some sort of machine that very quickly whips people around. The first two people to get whipped around therefore have to marry immediately. And you can probably knock out 4 or 5 of those an episode. Like something like that.
Yeah.
Or like somebody just runs up to two people in public and handcuffs them and then like they're married.
I mean, Fox's brand.
Chains of Love. Also already done.
Chains of Love. Yeah, Fox's brand has always been like knocking off successful reality shows from other networks. So I would love to see Fox do The Centrifuge. And since they canceled all of their sitcoms, they do have space for any half hour on their schedule, pretty much.
Rather than do a bunch of proposals in one show, like they meet in Act 1, they before the first commercial, before the second commercial, they get married. Then before the third commercial, then they're together and trying to make things work. And then by the end, they get divorced. And so everyone starts with a meet cute, then has a wedding, and then it ends in a divorce.
Well, that basically is a season of Married at First Sight, is what you have described. So if they just boiled that down to an hour, and by the way,
that's what I'm saying.
They
we
could
just do it.
They should
do it all in an hour. All in an hour. And then there's one whole segment where it's just the host standing out talking to the audience awkwardly as backstage the couple are having sex for the first time.
And in the audience, we should mention, are their parents, who they're often cut to for like reactions. Yeah. Like, Dad, do you give this whole scenario your blessing? He's like, kill me now. Why am I here?
Yeah.
So
these
bad.
Aren't tears of joy.
Yeah.
These
especially
are
the one who's
joy.
Like, I'm very traditional. Like, yeah, clearly.
Yeah.
Yeah. The Proposal is the show America deserves in 2018 for sure. Any closing thoughts on any of our shows?
I do want to throw out for The Proposal that when the one girl who was surprised by the amputee question, then she gets booted off when they're down to 4,
so
and the host booted. The host says to her as she walks off, he's like, nothing to be ashamed of. And I was like, what are you talking about? Are you sure? That there's nothing that she should be ashamed of?
Everything to be ashamed of.
Oh, my God.
On all of our parts.
That was the most cynical part, is that obviously to, like, attract the Bachelor audience, who, like, any of them are probably going to be watching anyway, is that the host is Jesse Palmer, past Bachelor. Like, you can almost imagine a version of the show that would be at all sufferable if, like, a Tom Bergeron were hosting it. Like, someone who knows what they're doing, but Jesse Palmer, like, fuck off. Fuck off to me forever.
Oh, I got it. It's a game show. It's Press Your Luck style, except instead of if you hit a whammy, you get married.
No whammies. No whammies. Oh, whammy.
That music means it is time for the canon. We had so many shows up top, we thought that is pretty much around the dial as well. So Tara has our canon submission this week. Take it away, Tara.
Hi, I have brought the series premiere of Fleabag, a show about a woman whose many flaws do not include her extremely excellent hair and lipstick. Seriously, since I don't have any context to give, what with us all arriving at the show today at its starting point, I'll get right into why I have brought it here. Number one, it's trying to tell its specific story, not ingratiate itself to anyone. So this is, to my knowledge, the first show we've ever covered for the canon that was based on a one-woman show. Creator slash star Phoebe Waller-Bridge originally staged it in that form for the Edinburgh Fringe Festival, which makes the success of this pitch more of a gamble than usual, because if you're not into our protagonist, the titular Fleabag, which is what she's actually credited as, we never find out what her name is, you're going to be super not into the show. And so Phoebe Waller-Bridge knows this, and she leans into it. This is the monologue that opens the series, and it's kind of long, but it's important. Clip one.
You know that feeling when a guy you like sends you a text at 2 o'clock on a Tuesday night asking if he can come and find you, and you've accidentally made it out like you've just got in yourself, so you have to get out of bed, drink half a bottle of wine, get in the shower, shave everything, dig out some agent provocateur business, suspend about the whole bit, and wait by the door until the buzzer goes. And then you open the door to him like you've almost forgotten he's coming over. Oh. Hi.
Hey.
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 And then you get to it immediately. After some pretty standard bouncing, you realize he's edging towards your asshole, but you're drunk, and he made the effort to come all the way here, so you let him. He's thrilled.
Oh, I'm so thrilled.
And then the next morning, you wake to find him fully dressed, sat on the side of the bed, gazing at you. He says that
last night was incredible,
which you think is an overstatement, but then he goes on to say that
it was particularly special because I've never managed to actually up the bum with anyone before.
To be fair, he does have a large penis,
and although it's always been a fantasy of mine, I've never found anyone I could do it with.
And then he touches your hair. And thanks you with a genuine earnest.
Thank you.
It's sort of moving. Then he kisses you gently. And then he leaves. And you spend the rest of the day wondering, do I have a massive asshole?
So, we've talked in the past about shows that dare you to stop watching by taking huge swings in their series premieres. A lot of viewers never made it past the Black Mirror premiere, the national anthem, and Smilf made a huge statement about its protagonist in its pilot by having her throw the quilt over her sleeping child so she could try to have sex not just next to him, but in the very bed where he was sleeping. So I'll leave it to history to decide where Fleabag's cold open should be located on the shot continuum, but it definitely dares you to bail on the show straight out of the gate. Content aside, the cold open also very economically establishes some formal elements of the show that you're about to watch. We get Fleabag giving her take on events straight to camera, including when there are other people in the scene, and it's idiosyncratic editing, as when Fleabag later recalls the moment her most recent ex broke up with her because he caught her masturbating to a Barack Obama speech, first giving her the chance to weasel out of it by telling him what the speech was about. She guesses a rock, she guesses wrong, clip two.
Don't say anything. Please don't stop me leaving. Please don't.
Okay.
Don't! I've really tried to be there for you through this. You can't say I haven't tried. Don't say anything. And please don't contact me. Or turn up my house drunk in your underwear. It won't work this time.
It will.
I'm taking that posh shampoo. He was talking about democracy.
Speaking of economical storytelling, what's the ex been trying to help her through? We'll come back to that. Number two. Somewhat related to point one, it knows quite well that Fleabag is, to say the least, imperfect, and it makes sure we know it knows. So in American sitcoms, the imperfections of a female character are often limited to bullshit like she's klutzy, or she's type A, or she's great at her job but her personal life is a mess, or she's too nice. No one is out here trying to say Fleabag is too nice, including Fleabag herself, who is most decidedly not the hero of her own story. The series premiere features numerous flashbacks, but takes place over the course of a single day of her life in which she expresses jealousy of her probably anorexic sister Claire and tortures Claire in ways most people outgrow in childhood, like pretending her hand is dirty before smearing it all over Claire's face, reminding Claire of the time Claire got drunk enough to shit in her sink, and crabbily returning Claire's presumed lost sweater, requiring her now to go back out with nothing under her coat but her bra. Next clip.
When you get cold.
Nah, I got really hairy nipples.
Fleabag goes on to steal a bill out of a date's wallet, regret trying to help a strange woman drunkenly nodding out on a curb, and have a full meltdown on the doorstep of the father we've already heard her say she's hated since her mother died and he took up with Fleabag's godmother. Fleabag may be beautiful and witty, but in general, she's not doing great. Number three, Fleabag is also all of us. One of the flashbacks, sparked by Claire's question about Fleabag's thrush-inducing underwear, is to Fleabag out shopping with her best friend Boo, and some fearless feedback that didn't go great for either of them. Clip four.
Oh my god, definitely not. That does nothing for you. I hate that. What?
These are my clothes, Boo. I've been wearing these all day.
Oh god. Were you wearing your coat?
Yes. Well, nothing here looked nice, so I just thought I'd wear what I was wearing anyway.
Are you joking?
Are you joking?
Yes.
Oh, my!
It's really not that bad at
all. Oh, what are you doing?
I love you!
I'm going to get a whole new outfit now!
I'll buy you pants. I'll buy you sexy...
I've been so many places today!
I'll buy you sexy pants!
Fuck off!
I'm sorry. I think it's a lovely dress!
Sarah and I have probably lived this exactly at least one time in a dressing room. Every beat of this exchange, Boo's frank judgment of what she thinks is a potential purchase, Fleabag's offense at the accidental insult, the way they both try to backpedal out of it before dissolving into hysterics, is so understated yet so true. Between this show and Insecure, we're really living in a golden age of carefully observed portrayals of female friendship. There's also this, the opening of the latest feminist lecture to which Fleabag and Claire's distant father has bought them tickets. Clip five.
Before we begin, I would like to ask you a question. I don't know about you, but I need some reassurance. So I pose the question to the women in this room today. Please raise your hands. If you would trade 5 years of your life for the so-called perfect body.
Fleabag and Claire are the only ones to put their hands up. We may doubt Fleabag as all of us when we meet the stepmother she's told us is a cunt, and she's played by known sweetie Olivia Colman. But then we find out that no, actually, cunt is a fair assessment. This is a compilation of exchanges from the beginning and end of their conversation, clip six.
What are you doing?
Oh, painting. I find the night times very peaceful, usually.
Oh, warming up.
Please look after yourself. You really do look ghastly, darling.
Not saying I would steal the valuable titty statue of any woman who said this to me, but I'm not saying I wouldn't. Anyway, my point is that the series premiere manages the difficult task of making Fleabag both repellent and relatable. Number four, it's frank in its portrayal of female sexuality. I guess I didn't have to say that after opening this presentation with the massive arsehole monologue, but the series premiere makes Fleabag's sexuality a crucial aspect of her character and key to our understanding of her. We've already heard the clip of her Obama speech kink, in which she was less interested in defending her masturbatory habits than in ditching a whiny old boyfriend. But one of the other moments of this very eventful day involves her liking the looks of a guy on her bus until he smiles and she's less interested after seeing his gigantic front teeth. She's still polite enough to have a brief chat, though that also turns out to be a disappointment. Clip seven.
So was that like, you can have my number or what do we?
Yes. Yeah, I guess that's a yes.
Oh my God. Great. Okay. That now. And I'll be sure to treat you like a nasty little bitch. That was a joke.
Oh, no, sorry. I know.
Yeah.
I know.
Okay. That was like, oh, okay.
The audio medium does not allow us to enjoy her devilish smirk at nasty little bitch and her deflated grimace when he immediately undercuts himself. But for the sake of we here who watched it, I had to bring them up. Fleabag goes on to meet the guy for drinks later, which ends like this. Clip eight.
Say we go. Warm up. Or perhaps like a little cocky tail. Or like another shot.
Yeah, or we could just go back to mine.
Wow. Thanks. I've actually got work tomorrow, but another drink.
Oh,
well,
we just go back to yours.
Got to be up really early. So.
Well, let's get you a cab in the morning.
It's ridiculous. I can't.
Okay, what the fuck is your problem?
Oh, nothing. I like you.
Okay, you're a dick.
What's going on?
You're pathetic.
Wait.
Don't follow me.
I wasn't. You drop this.
That's him returning the bill that she stole from him. Sometimes a guy with crazy teeth, his character is officially credited as Bus Rodent, whom you've dated out of obligation, won't want to bang one out and never see you again, and pissily rejecting him in order to not to involve his feelings won't really make you feel better. But hey, at least you can leave the transaction 20 or 50 pounds ahead. Despite his derogatory character name, Bus Rodent does maintain some amount of dignity by being honest and vulnerable. Did I mention Fleabag is a mess? I did. Number five, it subtly sets groundwork for the monologue that closes the episode. So through the episode, we've had hints about a major life event Fleabag has recently gone through. Her ex referred to something he had to help her through. The loan officer reviewing her application starts to say she opened her cafe with someone before Fleabag interrupts. In their awkward conversation, her stepmother asks if she's okay since everyone's been very worried about her. We find out what they've all been obliquely referring to in the final scene as she tells the story to her cabbie in clip nine.
I opened the cafe with my friend Boo.
Cute name.
Yeah. Yeah, she's dead now. She accidentally killed herself. It wasn't her intention, but it wasn't a total accident. She didn't actually think she'd die. She just found out that her boyfriend fucked someone else and wanted to punish him by ending up in hospital and not letting him visit her for a bit. She decided to walk into a busy cycle lane, wanting to get tangled in a bike, big finger maybe. As it turns out, bikes go fast and flip you into the road. Three people died. She's such a dick. So yeah, kind of on my own.
The next five episodes of the first season will continue adding flesh to the bones of the story, but here, as the day's succession of failures has broken Fleabag down, it doesn't feel outlandish that she would open up this way to a stranger. On the other hand, when the cabbie has no response, it may be that she's stunned him into silence with her excessively tragic answer to his friendly question. Or, given the show's formal conceits, it may be that Fleabag didn't tell him anything about Boo at all. I mean, yes, all her other soliloquies and Shakespearean asides were spoken straight to camera, But doesn't this seem like a character who might break any of her own rules? The story itself, obviously has its pathos built in. The ambiguity of its telling adds to the show's complexity and thoughtful craftsmanship. Fleabag is a smart, spiky, savagely hilarious portrayal of a particular mess of a woman dealing with the slow motion after effects of one of her life's greatest crises. And while there are dozens of ways such an undertaking could go wrong, the series premiere is confident, assured, and unapologetic. I hope you will induct it into the canon.
Let's let our guest, Jeff Drake, go first.
Thank you. And thank you, Tara, for bringing this show to the canon. I was a little, going into it, I was a little like, I don't know if there's a single standout episode of the series, which as a whole is so amazing. It really is, like, if you haven't seen this, you're in for such a treat to watch. And it's only 6 episodes, and that's both like, oh great, I can watch it like in an evening, and also like, oh, it's over in an evening. Everything you said is so spot on and really highlights the fact that that this show, like, it's coming at it, the way you presented it to the canon is I feel like gives a very good reason why it should be in there. This show is so funny. Phoebe Waller-Bridge is so charismatic and entertaining, and the character is nothing like anything you've ever seen. And the sly looks to the camera, like, are so, like, it's nothing at all. It's bears a similarity to like House of Cards, but it's like nothing at all like that. It's like so much, like, sometimes it's just her shifting her eyes, you know, and it's just so like, it's just so much better for that. And I mean, I don't know what else to say. Like the fact that they comically give the bus rodent like the most ridiculous front teeth, but then also make him sort of like the most charming guy is like, it's hard to explain how you can do that. Like, how do you be so grounded as a show and so ridiculous with those teeth, but still maintain the humanity of that character? Like, it's outrageous to me. I mean, so like, this is a show I've loved since I first saw it, whenever it first showed up on Amazon, and I've been looking forward to another series of it, which I guess is coming next year. And thank you for bringing it to the canon. I love this. Like, reliving this episode was just awesome and a delight. And I can't wait to hear what others say about it.
Yeah. Sarah.
Yeah, this was fantastic. I was in the minute she was on the bus with Bus Rodent, saw his teeth, turned to the camera and was like, doink. Like, there's just something about the way that she relates to the camera. But also, I think that we as a culture are getting a lot better and more nuanced at, first of all, like, telling stories about grief, and also telling stories about friendships that and close bonds that are almost familial, but not necessarily traditional. Like, you know, Tara and I joke around all the time about being each other's wives, except it's not jokes. Nope. So to see that on screen is like, we have Walking and Talking, of course. I can't stop smelling it. You see this more now, I think, in like sitcoms, but also shows that aren't exactly like sitcoms or dramedies, or like the shows don't exactly have a label, and neither do those relationships so much. So it's kind of cool to see. And also, this was hilarious. Like, when her sister tries to hug her, and she like hits her in the face. Oh, yeah. She's like, "I was trying to give you a fucking hug." She's like, "I was terrified. Never do that again." Like, that was just really funny. The fact that someone was credited as Bus Rodent, but then his whole patter during their date, which she is finding very boring, but I was sort of interested when he's like, "Well, I wouldn't say no to Maroon." Like, I don't know. I found that charming also. This show is a lot of things, but then isn't exactly anyone labelable. thing. And as you know, one of Bunsey's canon criteria is, did I want to keep going and watch another episode right away? And I certainly did. So excellent presentation. And yes, she is all of us totally. So well done. And let's hear Dave's comments, wrap this up with a vote, and finish the episode so I can go and watch more Fleabag. Dave.
So, Tara, you were saying that the show dares you not to watch it in the cold open. Did you mean, like, it dares you not to watch it right up until the button on the whole thing? Like, what was your... Or do you just mean the character as presented in the cold open? I'm curious what
that
you
it's that it's shocking. Yeah. That it's you know, it smacks
because
you in the face.
When she puts that button on the cold open, I was on the floor the first time. Like, it sold me
same
right away.
Yeah.
On this whole scenario, on this whole show. So I just was curious what you meant, because I feel like...
That is what I meant. Yeah, but I think that's it's like a litmus test. I feel like yes. There's a kind of person who would get to that point and be like, well, this is not for me. And like, that was the point.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, I get it. And you're totally right. For me, that cold open was right up there with, you know, Weast Infection from Brooklyn Nine-Nine, as far as cold opens go. It was just fantastic. Yes. I will say this episode, when you place it in the context of the rest of the series, is probably the lightest one. Like, the show gets darker.
Yeah, don't spoil it for Sarah.
No, but I will say that, like, the mix changes as you progress through the series, not in a bad way. It's just different. It is richer as it goes along, but not necessarily as funny.
That's hilarious, yeah.
Yeah, but it's still a very good show. And if you're wondering where you've heard this name before, we were talking about Killing Eve. That's her newest show that the lead here has created. And she's also the robot in Solo, if you were one of the five people that saw that movie, apparently.
And she was on Broadchurch as well.
Oh, was she? Okay.
Oh, yeah. Right, I forgot that.
But Tara, you're right. This manages to have it a lot of ways, and it manages to make them work. Which is no, you know, the alchemy of this show is no small feat. To have something that is abhorrent, funny, you know, touching in a sad way, and how all these things mingle properly, you know, instead of just being, you know, water off a duck's back sort of stuff, which you tend to see in other shows that try to fit a lot of disparate emotional, you know, things into one episode. This does it really well. Like, I really feel like all the points are earned. All the plot points make sense in this world, and they all flow from one into the other in a way that's not jarring, even though the range of what we're experiencing is wide. Phoebe is really great as the lead, and obviously, you know, this is her pet project, and she knows how to steer it, and I think it really shows in the premiere. And there's a confidence as you go beyond the premiere too that that you'll see as it progresses. So really strong entry. Really enjoyed it. If you like things that are mean spirited, give this a shot, because it definitely is. But it's more than that. So with that, let us put this to the official vote. Jeff Drake,
100% yes.
Sarah D. Bunting?
100% yes.
And I will also say yes. So that means... So that means... Fleabag, Series 1, Episode 1, no title because that's the way the British do it. You are hereby inducted into the Extra Hot Great Canon.
Americans love a winner. Yeah. And will not tolerate a loser.
Nope.
It is time for winner and loser of the week. Who has our winner?
Me. The winner is attendees for Comic-Con, because you know Comic-Con, where all the Marvel properties get to trot out their best and brightest for panels. And it's just been confirmed there's going to be a panel on Iron Fist, everyone's favorite show on Netflix. Report where I saw this on Deadline said there might be a Punisher panel because it's shot. And because John Bernthal, the star of it, is somehow coming back to Walking Dead for, I guess, a flashback next season, because he died on that show, spoiler. And there also may be one for Daredevil, which, same thing, it's already shot its next season, but so far it's just Iron Fist is all you got. So,
Tara,
enjoy that thin gruel, Comic-Con.
I'm sorry to interrupt, but I have a question. Isn't an Iron Fist panel at Comic-Con technically also a Punisher? Because it's terrible. Yes. Oh, I'm napping.
That's it.
And loser of the week?
Hardwick. At last. In case anyone is not familiar, Chris Hardwick, star of, not really anything, but also kind of everything. His ex, Chloe Dykstra, published a Medium letter about his emotional and verbal abuse. He was not named, but it was clearly him. Nerdist has already tried to erase him from their corporate history as of, like, I'm going to say 3 hours after this thing started hitting social media. And Hardwick has basically confirmed that Dykstra was talking about him by saying that he, quote, only yelled at her. Is that is that his defense?
Well, he said they didn't have a perfect relationship. They did argue and sometimes yelled. But he's also lost all of his talking shows on AMC. They've all been pulled, apparently.
Well, you can replace him with Yvette Nicole Brown on everything. In fact, you could replace him with Folgers Crystals. He is, I forget who screamed Medium talent in Chevy Chase's face. I think it was Bill Murray. But yeah, that. Fuck him. Bye.
Speaking about sudden...
Yes. Speaking I can't wait to find out where this transition is going.
Speaking about sudden farewells, do you know what time it is? It's game time.
Ouch.
Kicking, low scoring, and ties? You bet. This match will determine once and for all which nation is the greatest on earth, Mexico or Portugal.
It is the first game time of the new season. Today we are playing the World Cup of Television from Chris Billig, the Bilster, who earns himself an extra credit. Redeemable for an extra hot, great mini topic of his choosing. In today's game, all answers are the name of a country in the current 2018 World Cup. If you want that list to play along, it's in the show notes. Also, you could Google it and it'll be there too, I assume. That's pretty much it. There are 5 rounds, each with 9 questions. We'll explain the rounds as we go through. The steel mill situation is this. There are no steel meals because the imps took them away a couple episodes ago. So everybody has 0 steel meals. So suck it. Now let's throw it to the person in control choosing initiative, otherwise known as Picky 3000, to see who's going first.
We will start with Tara.
All right. Our order today, Tara, Sarah, Jeff. Any questions?
Yes. Are countries in here more than once?
They would have to be. Are we ready to play the World Cup of Television?
Sort of.
Here we go, starting with round 1. Name the World Cup participating nation that was a TV setting. All right, Tara. Yep. Name a World Cup country that has been a setting for Survivor. There are a few to choose from. You only need to name one.
Panama.
You are correct for 1 point. Australia, Brazil, and Panama were your possibilities. Sarah Bunting, your first question. What is the setting of the upcoming 4th season of Narcos?
The upcoming 4th season of Narcos? Mexico?
Correct for 1 point. Ooh, Jeff, nice. Your first question. Where was Wallander set?
Wallander is set in... Sweden.
Correct. Everybody's got their first point. Well done. Back to Tara. Where was the Challenge XXX Dirty 30 set?
Jeez. This is going to be a straight up guess. And that guess is as follows. Mexico again.
Incorrect. It was Colombia. Colombia.
Ooh.
All right. Sarah D. Bunting, name a World Cup country that has been the location for a Conan trip. Three possibilities. You only need to name one.
A Conan trip?
Yes. He goes on little travel trips.
He goes on jaunts. I will say Merry Old England.
No. The three in question, Germany, Mexico, and South Korea.
I was going to say South Korea. Shit.
Jeff, name two World Cup countries that have been a setting for Naked and Afraid. You need to name two out of a possible eight.
That's garbage.
Wait, for one point?
Yes.
Still for one? Oh, yes. Okay. Yeesh.
Okay.
Good luck, Jeff. Those eight. You can get two.
All right. I'm going to go Costa Rica, Panama.
You are correct. See?
Nice.
Wow.
Hey.
Total
All right. Everybody's
guess.
Last question of round one. The miniseries on Wings of Eagles was set during which country's 20th century revolution, Tara?
Ooh. On Wings of Eagles, you say?
Yes.
Spain?
Incorrect. That's Iran. Iran.
Oh.
All right. Sarah D. Bunting, where was either American attempt at I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here filmed? There's two possibilities. Give me one.
Either attempt at I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here. Saudi Arabia. I have no idea.
The answers.
Australia
and Costa Rica. All right, last question of round one for Jeff. Name two World Cup countries that have been the primary location for MTV's The Real World. Where we're going abroad, name two.
Jesus. I'm going to say England, and I'm also going to say Brazil.
You had one, England. The others were Australia, France, and Mexico. And that ends round one. Let's get the scores, please, Tara.
Very close game. Jeff has 2 points. Sarah and I are tied with one each.
All right. We are now in round two. In what World Cup country did the original version of the show I'm about to say air? I'm going to give you the show. You got to trace it back to its origin World Cup country. Are you ready?
Got it.
Tara,
yes.
The Good Doctor.
Oh.
Hoping for Prune.
I'm going to guess. Shit. South Korea.
Wow.
Sarah D. Bunting.
So many fun noises.
Humans.
Heard of them.
Thank you.
Oh, country of origin?
Yes.
England.
That is the remake. The original from Sweden.
Oh, right. Okay. Shit.
Jeff Drake.
Yes.
Our good friend Steakface, a.k.a. Rake.
Rake.
Originally from this country.
I'm going to just go with the country that I picked before even hearing the question and say Denmark.
It is Australia. Australia. Okay. Tara.
Yes.
The Killing.
Fuck. Forget it. Denmark.
Oh!
You.
There it is.
Sarah D. Bunting, Ugly Betty.
Mexico again?
Colombia.
Damn it.
The Slap, Jeff. The Slap.
The Slap. Pretty sure it's Australia.
You are correct.
Nice.
The Mole, Tara. The Mole.
Oh, is that one Sweden?
That is Belgium, from Belgium.
What?
Sarah D. Bunting, Survivor.
Gosh. I don't actually know, so I'm going to guess England again.
That was Sweden. That was Sweden. Last question of round two for Jeff, the Tomorrow People.
The Tomorrow People?
The Tomorrow People.
Okay. Where's Picky when I need him to choose something? Let's say Germany.
Incorrect. England. England was the Tomorrow People's first home. Scores, please, Jeff.
Still very close. Jeff and I are now tied with three each. Sarah has one.
Okay. So, round three, guys. This is The Simpsons are going to name the World Cup country based on the Simpsons clip I am about to play. All right? Yes. Either takes place in or is definitely about a World Cup country. Tara, here's your clip.
Eine Minute, eine Minute. Das Wagenphone ist ein Nuisance-Phone.
Schönes Notches, mein Führer.
Ja.
Yeah, where's that clip take place in?
Oh, that takes place in Argentina.
Correct, for 1 point. To Sarah D. Bunting.
Well, I heard they sent a rocket to the sun once at night, and there was that submarine with a screen door.
No. Young man, you need to do some serious boning.
What country is Milhouse talking about in that clip?
Of Poland?
Yeah.
Have I ever mentioned, just as a sidebar, that growing up in Saskatchewan, all Polish jokes are Ukrainian jokes, and that is... That is a real thing. That was the persecuted Slavic joke target.
And you go a little further east, and they're Newfie jokes or whatever.
Yeah, so
true.
I was gonna say.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, all right,
morphs.
Proceed. Sorry.
All right, for Jeff, your first Simpsons clip.
You call that a knife? This is a knife.
That's not a knife. That's a spoon.
All right. You win. I see you've played knifey spoony before.
Knifey spoony from.
No. From Australia.
Correct. Back to Tara.
Yeah, what is this thing?
It is a monkey's paw dating back to Alal bin Abdallah. It has the power to grant wishes to its owner.
Yeah? How much?
Sir, I must strongly advise you to not purchase this. Behind every wish lurks grave misfortune. I myself was once president of Algeria.
Come on, pal. I don't want to hear your life story. Paw me.
Has not aged well. Morocco.
Speak about not has aged well.
Look at this country. You are gay.
Is that Uruguay?
To Jeff.
Welcome to Judy Dench's Fish and Chips. Now completely free of mad fish disease.
Fish? I don't know. I'm not really a vegetarian.
Please order or Miss Dench will be furious. She'll beat us, she will.
What's that World Cup country, Jeff?
Oh, I'm sorry. I couldn't tell if the clip was over. England.
England is correct. Back to Tara. Here's your final Simpsons clip.
Must crush capitalism.
Russia.
Yes, that is the reanimated body of Lenin.
There is.
And now here is Sarah's last clip. Sarah?
Yep, there's your answer, Fishbulb.
The end to a very famous little bit.
Not famous enough, not so I am very confidently going to guess Tunisia.
That was the end of the Mr. Sparkles reveal from Japan.
I am disrespectful to dirt.
I am disrespectful to dirt, yes. Last clip to Jeff Drake.
My children need a wine!
France.
France is correct. All right, scores after round three, please.
Well, Jeff and I are still tied with 6 points each. Sarah has three.
Okay, we are now in round four. Round four, where were these people born? And there is a team nickname included in the hint. All right?
Ooh.
So, okay. Tara, Patrick Melrose's Hugo Weaving cheering for the Super Eagles.
Australia?
Super Eagles from Nigeria. From Nigeria.
Huh.
Yeah.
What do you know?
Mr. Robot's Marvin Wallstrom cheering for the Blaggut, a.k.a. the Blue Yellows.
Flag hint in there for you. Not a geography buff.
Mr. Sweden? Robot's Martin Wallstrom with a umlaut over the O, cheering for the Blue Yellows.
Sweden.
Hey.
Timeless's Goran Visnik. Am I saying that right?
Nope. Visnish.
Okay. Cheering for the Blazers. The Blazers.
Croatia?
Yes, you are correct. The Handmaid Tales, Yvonne Stravosky? Cheering for the Socceroos.
This is Australia.
The Vampire Diaries, Kate Graham, rooting for the Red Crusaders.
Cat Graham, if it matters.
Oh. And let me just delete
it doesn't
that E.
really.
Cat Graham, rooting for the Red Crusaders.
Let's go with, I've actually no idea. Iceland, why not?
The flag is red. It's got a cross. That's Switzerland. Switzerland. All right, to Jeff. Glee's Harry Shlum rooting for the Los Ticos.
It's Harry Shum Jr., I believe.
Harry Shum Jr. rooting for the Los Ticos.
Los Ticos. I'm going to go with Spain.
It's Costa Rica.
Ticos
is the sort of the
Canucks
of Costa Rica. American Crime Stories, Penelope Cruz rooting for the La Furia Roja.
This is Spain.
This is Spain.
That is Spain.
Former Real Housewife Joanna Krupa cheering for the Eagles. The Eagles. Wow.
The Eagles. Philadelphia. Just kidding. Let's say Poland again.
Correct.
Yay. Whoa.
Big Eagles on the Polish coat of arms.
Someone had to watch that show. And it was
Jeff Drake. This is round four's final question. The Looming Towers, Zafur El Zabidin, rooting for the Eagles of Carthage.
Okay. Carthage. I'm going to say Tunisia.
You would be correct. There's a man who knows his history. Scores, please, Tar.
We're still tied with 8 each. Sarah has 5.
Okay, 8 to 5. Going into round 5, our final random trivia round.
Uh-oh.
Starting with Tara. Basim Youssef hosted a program often compared to The Daily Show in which World Cup country?
I think Egypt.
You think correctly. Name one, Sarah, name one of two World Cup nations where former A&E reality star Steven Seagal is a citizen.
Oh, gosh.
Two possibilities, one answer needed.
All right. Let us say, then, Japan.
What?
Decent guess. He was in Japan for a while at his own dojo. But he's a citizen of Serbia and Russia.
Would not have guessed either of those.
The Russian thing is new. He's, he's gotten good with Putin.
Good.
Cool.
Jeff Drake.
Yeah.
This country's satire, Selfie, is hugely popular while it addresses issues like sectarianism, refugees, and women driving.
Wow. Wait, what are the three things it addresses?
Sectarianism, refugees, women driving.
Saudi Arabia.
You are correct. The cast and crew of Top Gear, Tara, had to be escorted out of which country after displaying a license plate referencing the Falklands War?
Argentina?
Correct.
Yeah.
30 Bunting. This former French colony has been airing Car-B-E, I think, B-I-I, since 2009. One might call it Dakar's next top sheep. So I'll let you know, before you answer, I looked it up. It is a show about, basically, it's the reality show equivalent of a county fair first sheep, best sheep, except it's the whole nation, and it's extremely popular. It's still running.
Like American Idol for sheep?
Yeah. No, it's
and it's called.
Okay. So non-American sheep. Morocco.
Ooh. Senegal.
Ah, why Senegal?
Jeff Drake.
Yes.
Where did the Smurfs get their start in comics and film?
Oh, Denmark.
Incorrect.
Belgium.
Correct.
Damn it.
So weird.
Made by Reg Grundy Productions, The Best of ABBA 1976 is still the most watched show of all time in which country?
Oh, this feels like a trick question. I'm going to zig when I should probably zag and say Australia.
Well done.
Wow.
Sarah D. Bunting, what country
Thanks,
airs
Muriel's Wedding.
What country airs Sesame Square featuring Zobie, who eats yams instead of cookies and teaches kids about malaria?
Oh my god.
Sesame Square featuring Zobie, who eats yams instead of cookies and teaches kids about malaria.
I just have no idea, but I feel like this country is getting no love in this game. So, Peru.
That is Nigeria.
Oh.
All right. Last question of the game for Jeff Drake. Oh. The documentary Exporting Raymond was about Phil Rosenthal making a version of Everybody Loves Raymond for what country?
I think it was for Russia.
You think correctly. All right.
Nice.
That's round five. Scores, please, Tara.
Sarah had five. Jeff had 10. At 11.
Oh, squeaks by with the victory in the first
Such
game. Before we congratulate Tara, let's use our tiebreaker to give out our first steel meal of the season.
Woo.
All right. It's going to be a hot potato style game. World Cup participants that are settings for a version of The Bridge, either aired or currently in production. And we'll go Sarah, Jeff, Tara.
Okay.
So a setting for any version of The Bridge that's aired or is currently in production. There
okay.
are nine possible answers.
Oh.
All right. Denmark.
Denmark. Yep. Jeff.
Sweden.
America.
Mm.
Oh, currently, fuck.
Duh.
England.
Germany.
Mm.
France.
Australia.
Oh, incorrect.
Damn
Sarah gets the first steel meal of the season.
Woo, good job, there.
Croatia is in production, along with Serbia. That's that show. There is somebody mentioned Germany. There's a German Austria show in the works. And of course, we had Denmark, Sweden, the original. We had Mexico as the missing country from the American one
sure.
that Tara screwed up. And Russia, Estonia is another one. So Russia was your other answer that was not mentioned.
Huh.
So,
all right.
Tara.
Congratulations, Tara and Sarah, for the steal. That, guys, is it for another episode of Extra Hot Great. We dug up Korean pirate treasure, paid rent for broken trust, cooked up 24 hours to
Korean
hell and back, barked
treasure.
About Howie Mandel's animals doing things, and finally understood the upside till death do we part with the proposal. Tara, a massive arsehole, made the successful pitch for Fleabag's debut for the canon. We crowned winners and losers of the week, and Tara was the winner of this season's first game time. Remember,
we're listening.
I am David T. Cole, and on behalf of Tara Ariano,
we're bad feminists.
Sarah D. Bunting,
I wouldn't say no maroon.
And Jeff Drake,
Howie Mandel's son did things to my pet.
Thanks.
Oh.
Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time, right here on Extra Hot Crate.
Another let's fake, another abortion.
Another piece of cake, another two.
Fuck 20 cigarettes.
And we're happy, so happy.
to be modern women.
This has been a production of the Previously.tv Podcast Network.